You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Good morning, Radio Rehab. Glad to be back today. Happy Saturday. I have an incredibly exciting guest this morning, and we're lucky to have her in Evansville, Indiana. Her name is Jane Siegel. She's the director of the Indiana Judicial Center. So she came to Southern Indiana to speak at our drug court graduation in Warwick County, but she's really the woman that's the mainliner of laws and policies and coaching of judges and attorneys around the state to help them develop programs that help folks like we talked to on Radio Rehab that have gotten in legal trouble because of their addiction. So I'm very glad she's taken the time to stay and talk to us in the community. So I'm not going to talk long. I just want to introduce you to her and tell you this is going to be a great half hour. Thanks for tuning in. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Lisa. It's great to be here this morning. Thank you.
It's great to have you in Warwick County, Indiana.
Well, it's nice to be here. And we had a wonderful event last night. I think it certainly causes you to take stock of where we are in this movement, in the drug court movement, as we watch people successfully complete their program, watch their lives be turned around. And so I appreciate the invitation to get to be there last night and to just see the success of those young men. It was great.
It really was, and how you and your talking to them so lovingly and affectionately tied it into Abraham Lincoln's birthday. That, because that's a whole civil rights issue in itself, isn't it?
Yes, and I think we don't have an opportunity very often to look back on history and see those folks that are truly still role models for us, and the kind of work ethic, the kind of principles and character issues that Abraham Lincoln really does mean for all of us. And so I just thought how appropriate that we were having a drug court on his 200th birthday.
Yeah.
It was just a unique opportunity, and I was grateful to have it.
It really was, and I think, like you said, especially folks in recovery, early recovery, no matter what age, often have lost their role models along the way. And to bring that to them, that Abraham Lincoln is a good role model for all of us, I think they heard that.
Well, I'm glad. I did a lot of reading about Abraham Lincoln ahead of time, and some of the things that he said, and realizing that he truly did come from humble beginnings, and how hard he had to work, you know, his limited education initially, and all the obstacles he faced, and yet he persevered.
That's right.
And that's what it takes to be in recovery, and just the commitment that it takes, and that he certainly exhibited all of that. But it's also about the fact that he cared about others, and we as a larger community can certainly emulate that as we embrace these people who we care so much about and want to see succeed.
Yes, yes. And Jane, you've been so big in the drug court movement, which is really new in our area. Judge Trockman has done an awesome job in Vandenberg County planting seeds in the community about recovery, and Judge Meyer here. And you get to meet judges and people all over the state. Is that the new movement? Let's help these folks get rehabilitated?
I sure hope it is. We're seeing a growth in Indiana in the number of drug courts that we have, and actually in the number of what we are calling problem-solving courts. Actually, it's a national movement where judges are stepping out of their comfort level a little bit because they are putting together a number of resources to help people who have a variety of troubles. The most popular and most well-known model is the drug court model, and I am a total fan of the drug court because I believe that it combines the appropriate amount of accountability. You've got a judge that is taking time out of their very busy schedule to take an interest in somebody and to say, hey, I want you to succeed, but I'm going to hold you accountable because, you know, unfortunately, even though we know that that being addicted to drugs and being addicted to alcohol is a disease, it's still the use of those in a public arena is illegal.
Yes.
And so when that happens, we do have to hold people accountable for that. And so if you have a judge that understands that the underlying reason people do the kinds of things they do is because of an addiction, mm-hmm. because of an illness, then they can combine the treatment and the programmatic pieces along with holding somebody accountable. And honestly, it works. It's yeah. a much more effective way of dealing with people with addiction.
And it keeps their dignity intact.
Oh, well, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's got to be key, too.
Yeah. Well, and a judge will not enter into this arena unless they want people to succeed. What I hear the most from judges is that they have seen the same people over and over again through the system,
yeah.
or they've seen generation after generation in the same family
yes.
that exhibit the kinds of problems, and they want to put an end to the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think drug courts give us that opportunity. You know, are they successful in every single case? No, but mm-hmm. they sure have a greater potential for allowing somebody to get the services they need, to give them a support network so that they will continue to get the services and support they need. If you just put them in prison and throw away the key, they're not going to get the help, and they are coming back home.
Yeah.
And if they come back home without the tools they need to beat that addiction, they're going to enter back right back into where they were.
Absolutely.
And so that we know that doesn't work.
Right.
And so we really do need, as a community, and as a criminal justice system, to look for ways to break that cycle. And I'm convinced drug court can do it.
I think so, too. It's proven. I don't know if it was you or Randall Shepherd had said at one of the conferences I went to that if you look at the history of punishment, it was only to help us, not really the offender. It didn't change their behavior. It just somehow pleased us.
Yeah.
Is that changing?
I think that attitude, the attitude about punishment alone, is certainly changing. There are certain instances when punishment is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly when we're concerned about community safety, the fact that somebody cannot commit a crime because they're incarcerated, that is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
But for most of the people that we're dealing with in drug court, it's not about community safety. It's about their addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they are in jail or in prison, they aren't getting the services that they need to beat that addiction. Or they're getting minimal services, mm-hmm. or they're getting them late. You know, the timing of the services becomes an issue
yes.
when they're in jail or incarcerated. Now, every once in a while, a little quick visit may be a wake-up call for somebody.
I think so.
And that may be an appropriate use of, as a sanction, that may
right.
be an appropriate use of jail. But to think that jail is going to change somebody's behavior is absolutely a misconception. It does not work.
No.
For that purpose.
But we still spend so much money, millions and millions, more than higher education in this country, to punish people in prisons.
Yeah. And as a person in the criminal justice system, there, you know, if somebody breaks the law, there should be some accountability.
Yes,
you won't hear me say that I don't think there isn't any
right.
place for punishment.
Right.
There is, but if the expectation of our society is that by putting them in prison we're going to make somebody better, that's not accurate. We really have to look at, in the entire criminal justice system, we need to look at ways to change people's behavior.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get to the root cause
mm-hmm.
of what those behavioral issues are. And particularly in the case of substance abuse, that is addictive behavior.
Yeah.
And that's really what we need to target. And I truly believe we can do it better in the community setting.
Well, absolutely, and what you're saying really, it's about community wellness, that the substance offender affects everybody, legally and in their families and their jobs, not just illegal behavior, but addiction is a wellness issue, a sickness.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Do you think more people are beginning to believe that, or at least beginning to understand that addiction is an illness, or do you think we still need to educate a lot more?
Oh, I'm not sure that we're ever going to get to a place where everybody understands the whole addictive process and the disease component of addiction, but I sure think we're making great strides. I think we have, and from my perspective, as we see more and more folks going through drug court, and we see people of influence, such as judges, finding out that, hey, this makes a difference. This turned somebody's life around. They really could be. You know, when people first started, when we first dealt with the meth crisis, I heard a number of very well-educated people say, you know, once you're addicted to meth, you can't get well. Well, that's not true.
Right.
That's absolutely not true. And I think there's a certain amount of fear because meth is so dangerous and so volatile. But I think once those people certainly can be helped. And
did you hear that about cocaine in its day, heroin in its day? Is this just the drug du jour of the?
You know, I think certainly as research develops, we get more and more information about how we can help people who are addicted. Mm-hmm. I don't remember it as clearly with cocaine and heroin. I do think that people just thought someone was lost, you know, if they were addicted to heroin. I do remember that being, you know, extremely...
The Vietnam era.
Exactly. Very scary. And, you know, someone's addicted to heroin and, you know, then, you know, they...
Don't let them in your house.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think with the incredibly quickly rising growth of meth use,
yes,
and meth manufacturing, I think that created a real scary environment, and people all over the country, you know, and legislators, and you know, felt that they needed to address that immediately. And there was a real fear that because meth is so highly addictive,
yes,
that you couldn't recover from it, and that is not true. The people who do work very, very hard, and it's not. I won't say it's easy to recover. It's certainly not easy. I've watched in a number of courts where meth addicts have a very hard time. But they can. They can recover. And I think we in the criminal justice community need to help them and help them try.
And I know that's something you're very, very committed to doing. And I appreciate it. And I know all the recovering people do, too. They may not see the big system. So we're going to take a break right now. Don't go away. We'll be back to Radio Rehab in just a minute after our break. Well, we're back for Radio Rehab and have an incredible guest, Jane Siegel, who's the head of the Indiana Judicial Center. We're talking about drug courts and drug addiction and alcoholism as an illness, which is her philosophy and belief, community wellness, et cetera, et cetera. And at break, we talked a little about probation and the first entrance that a lot of offenders have, a misdemeanor, drunk driving, or possession of marijuana. And she's had years and years of experience with that as well, so we're discussing that at this point. Jane, could you talk a little about how probation does deal with this, even if it's a minor consumption? What if they're addicted? And just philosophically, some of the things that you've seen have changed in the world of probation, which is the first entry into our system.
Well, I think the Indiana Judicial Center sets all the standards for probation across the state. So we have a very active role in the administration of probation. One of the things that we have really been stressing, particularly in the last several years, is the use of evidence-based practices. Mm. What we like to see is, you know, just because if someone's on probation, they just come in and they just report and say, hey, I'm fine, here's my pay stub, you know, the old traditional ideas about probation. You know, we talked in the last segment about how punishment doesn't change someone's behavior. Well, just calling them in and checking on them like that doesn't change
That's
their behavior
true.
Either.
Especially the addiction.
Exactly. And so what we have been encouraging probation to do is to approach it with a similar philosophy, approach our offenders with a similar philosophy, that if we want to see improvements in their behavior, we're going to have to do something more. And so one of the things that we have really pushed in the last several years is the importance of using a risk assessment mechanism, where you really sit down with the offender and you try to figure out where their problem areas are. Mm. So if addiction shows up on your risk assessment as a problem area, that the probation officer can be a conduit for getting that person into treatment. And we can deal with it right up front, as opposed to waiting for additional crimes to be committed.
Absolutely.
So that's one of the areas where we are really working hard in probation.
What do you have to do to be qualified to assess those risks?
Well, there's a number of instruments out there that actually the Judicial Conference Board of Directors has approved some instruments, and of course you need to be trained on the use of those instruments.
So anybody could give the instrument at intake?
If they have been trained on it. If they're a probation officer and have been trained on it. Now we have a risk assessment instrument that's used statewide that we're in the process of updating. And we're really excited about this project because we will be able to get better information and make sure that the offender gets better services because of that. But we really want to get at what is causing that offender to think and act the way helped in the most effective way.
So you really need qualified frontline people that know how to motivationally interview and steer the ship.
That's certainly where we're headed. That is the ideal. We want probation officers, court alcohol and drug employees, drug court employees, all of those folks with a similar commitment, a similar vision of where we're headed.
That's great. What about lawyers?
Well, you know, we don't do a lot of training of lawyers, but judges certainly are part of our target audience, and we provide education.
They meet so many people,
right?
Lawyers.
Well,
what a entrance in right there. Yeah. If they could confront it or understand it and intervene.
Well, you know, sometimes for lawyers, some of their best teachers are judges, and so if we can get the judges as well to understand the importance of changing behavior and not just doing things routinely or just because we've always done it that way. That, in fact, in the criminal justice area, there have been tremendous strides in terms of the research available on what works to break the cycle.
Yes.
Once again, it's not going to work for everybody, but it sure works for an awful lot of people.
Yes.
And, you know, my take is if you can keep 30%, even 30% from reoffending,
isn't that the truth?
And
yes.
Think of the cost
yes.
to society, that the savings there,
oh
not
my.
Just in terms of dollars, which we of course all worry about.
Right.
If you can not only deal with it from an economic standpoint, which does get people's attention, but honestly, at more on the human level, on how that person's behavior has maybe torn apart a family, or they're not paying their taxes, or their child support, or they're not, you know, whatever it is that relationally, you know, causing additional petty crime, whatever it might be, if we can stop that from happening because we can reach that offender, I think it's critical.
Yeah.
I don't want to be misinterpreted. You know, a lot of times people say, oh, that just sounds like hug a thug. You know, you hear
that too.
You hear that. That's not it at all. It is looking at a societal problem and what works to fix it. And we now have the tools and we have the research to back us up that there are ways we can impact that offender and help change their behavior. Certainly they're going to have to be the ones to make the changes, but we can certainly help them. And that's critical
and
to
you
the
know,
success.
It is, and to have you leading that charge and Randall Shepherd, people that are at the state level making those changes. I hear you talking, and I think when I was in the healthcare profession for 20 years before the judicial world, it was all about holistic health. What you're talking about, Jane, is holistic in the approach to how we deal with people. Nobody would have ever thought the criminal justice or judicial system was thinking in terms of holistic at all. So that is awesome.
Well, it is. It is a very big change.
Yes.
And that will have an impact on their community. If you can keep that person from reoffending, and that's what this is all about.
That's true. Yeah.
From the criminal justice perspective, we don't fitting that individual mm-hmm. with the services they need for their addiction. If you don't have an appreciation that relapse is part of the addiction process, then I'm concerned that you'll be defeated before you begin, because the research shows that there are moments in an addict's life where relapse happens, and we're grateful when it doesn't. Don't get me wrong, but the research shows that it happens more regularly than it doesn't, but that's part of the recovery.
Absolutely.
And so while you need to address relapse,
yes,
if for someone who's in one of those programs, I don't view that as a new crime. I view that as part of the process.
Oh, that's great to hear.
And that you
have to revoke them or put them in jail forever.
I think if you revoke them, then that person, unfortunately, will probably continue to spiral down.
Yes.
Whereas if you can continue to keep them in the program during that period and get them back on track, you may be able to salvage somebody and bring them back as a productive member of society. And that's what we want.
So I have to ask you in closing, you have such a gentle, compassionate view of how to deal with some of the most oppressed and vulnerable in our society, and that's the addicted, the alcoholic, the most misunderstood in a lot of ways. What made you have the kind of heart and head you have about this issue? Because it is easier to just lock them up.
Well, I think that's a very good question, and it's something that has been, I think, growing in me. As we've talked about, as I read more and learn more about the issues, I become more convinced that we can do things better. But I also think that I'm a person of faith, and deep down I truly look for the good in other people, and that is that's probably what drives me. I like to see the best that somebody can be and try to bring that out in that person, and I just feel like I'm called to do that, and so that's probably the underlying my life philosophy. But I also think that as professionals in the criminal justice system, we need to do everything we can to be better. And I see promise in these practices, and I see that, you go to a drug court graduation and you do see people's lives turned around. And that's what it's all about. And that's what we strive for.
Yeah, that transformation's obvious at graduations, isn't it? Well, thank you so much for taking the time and for putting in the energy to make the world a better place.
Well, thank you, Lisa. You too. I appreciate all that you do, and
you.
Certainly we are partners in this work. And
Trusted servants.
That's right. So, well, thank you very much.
I appreciate you coming. It's always good to have you here, Radio Rehab. We'll be back again next Saturday. Don't forget to tune in. But between now and then, don't forget to do the next right thing.